Right, what we want to look at then is what's the Bible's attitude towards wealth and what's the Bible's attitude towards poverty. Have you all seen the Simpsons episode where the Simpson family gets into financial difficulty because they have to do an operation on Santa's Little Helper?
Yeah.
You all seen that episode? It's a groupie episode. Santa's Little Helper has to have an operation on its stomach because he has a twisted stomach. And so the family has to give up its savings and spend a huge amount of money to save Santa's Little Helper, Bart's dog. And so Marge sits down one night with the family and says, right, I've come up with a plan for, you know, saving his money. And she goes around and tells, you know, Bart that he's going to have to give up on having his hair cut properly, and Lisa's not going to get a certain bunch of encyclopedias. And Homer's going to give up his favourite, isn't going to get his favourite meat, his favourite type of meat every week. And everybody's really annoyed. And Homer says, okay, Marge, I've got another plan. Basically, we become a family of travelling acrobats. And Marge pauses for a second and says, I don't think you thought this through. When it comes to the Bible, and when it comes to Christians talking about wealth and poverty and how money's spoken about in the Bible, that's basically, quite a lot of time when I'm sitting in church, that's exactly how I think. What tends to happen, this happens in a lot of religious subjects. People lift out one verse, and they go with that one verse, or one story, they go with that one story, and they don't think it through. So you'll get verses in the Old Testament in the book of Proverbs that talk about how, you know, here's a favorite one of mine. You know, the righteous shall be fat. You know, the righteous shall be fat. Yeah, people around the room looking at me and thinking, what on earth does that mean? Well, if you think about it, in ancient times, it was difficult to get fat. You know, people didn't have that much food. So a fat person was a rich person. Now, you can take a look at that verse in the Old Testament and think, I've got a God-given religious duty to go out and get as fat as I possibly can. But that's not what the verse means. But some people look at a lot of those verses in the Old Testament and they tend to think along the lines of, oh, right, if you follow Jesus, God will give you lots of money. And there's actually a movement called the Health and Wealth Gospel that teaches something like that. That if you become a Christian, God will give you lots and lots of money. And then there's another extreme, an opposite extreme, which we'll talk about in a minute, which seems to think that the Bible thinks it's great to be poor. Let's take a look at a few verses in the Bible. First one I imagine you've all heard of, and that is the love of money is the root of all evil. Have you heard of that? Yes, Mr. Bale, yes. The love of money is the root of all evil. Second verse, taught by Jesus. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? And a third one, store up riches in heaven, where rust and moth does not destroy. That's what something that Jesus said to his followers, store up riches in heaven. Don't save money in the bank. Don't save money in business. Store up riches in heaven. That's where it's much more important. There's a famous story in the Bible where a rich young man comes to Jesus and says to Jesus, what will I have to do to get eternal life? And Jesus says to him, well, you have to keep the commandments. And the young fellow says, well, I have kept all the commandments from my young lad. So Jesus says, right, I'll tell you what you have to do now. I want you to sell everything you have and give it to the poor. And the young man goes away really sad because the Bible says he has many possessions. Actually, if you read in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus actually gives the advice there that he gives in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, store up riches in heaven. I want you to store up riches in heaven. In those days, actually, the temple, the big temple in Jerusalem, would have been the bank that people would have put their money in. And Jesus was basically saying to this young fella, don't put your money in the temple. Don't store up your money in the temple in Jerusalem. Listen, I want you to give that money to the poor. So there seems to be one thing that the Bible's saying. If you're a rich person, you have to sell everything. You've got to give the whole lot up. So you could lift that verse and you could get the idea that if you become a Christian, you've got to give up your job. You've got to sell all your possessions. You've got to throw everything out and you've got to live like a poor person. And there's a group of monks called the Franciscan monks who tried to live that way that are still around today. There are still some monastic orders who think that's a very serious teaching. But some people almost get it into their head that a Christian is somebody who has to sell absolutely everything. That's one of Marge Simpson's, what I call a Marge Simpson moment. I don't think you've thought this through. Because there's another verse that Jesus, there's a very famous verse that Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. And he says this, I want you to give to the one who asks from you, and do not turn away the one who borrows from you. Somebody wants to take your cloak, I want you to give them their tunic as well. Now, there's a slight problem. If when you follow Jesus, you sold absolutely everything. If when you follow Jesus, you give everything up, sold the house, sold the farm, sold everything you had, give it to the poor, walked out and didn't own anything except the cloak on your back, how do you give money to someone who asks of you? How do you lend money to someone who wants to borrow from you if you sold the whole shebang when you became a Christian? Now, that's important because in church recently, I've actually heard a guy at the front of a church saying something along the lines of, when you become a Christian, you've got to give the whole shebang up. Marge Simpson moment. I don't think you've thought this through. Because what do you do with those verses in the Bible that say, listen, give money to people who need it. Lend money to those who need it. Where's that money coming from if you give the whole lot up? Now, what is absolutely clear in both those verses is that the be-all and end-all of life is not money. The be-all and end-all of life is not collecting money. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. There are certain people in the Bible who give up absolutely everything to follow Jesus. You find that in Jesus' disciples. For example, Matthew the tax collector, or sometimes called Levi, he's called to give up absolutely everything. Peter and his brother just seem to leave their fishing business to follow Jesus. So there are some people who seem to follow Jesus absolutely everywhere. Now, in Jesus' day, that was a massive sacrifice and a massive risk. That is basically what the rich young man was being asked to do. Jesus was basically saying to him, right, if you want to be my follower, I want you to be like Peter. I want you to be like Matthew. I'm calling you to be one of my inner circle. I'm calling you to be one of my main men. I want you to be one of the guys whose full-time job it is to go around and to make sure everybody hears my word. In Jesus' day, it was not like today. Today, if I lose my job, the government has a duty to make sure that I don't starve. Now, I mean, the government has an absolute duty there. The government is not allowed to let me starve to death. In Jesus' day, the government had a duty to let you starve. It was 100% the opposite. A poor person, everybody reckoned if you were poor, that was a bad way to be. And the way the world looked at it was your fault. No money, your fault. Starving to death, your fault. You get yourself out of it. The only people that you had to help you were your family. Now, your family didn't have money, you were stuck. Jesus was also living in a time when there was massive taxation. Has anybody ever heard of the tithe? Tithing your tenth? One or two, you know what I'm saying? You sometimes hear this, the Bible says that you have to tithe a tenth of your money. Actually, that's not actually technically true. What it said is you had to tithe a tenth of what you grew. That could end up being much, much more than just a tenth of your money. Most people in Jesus' day didn't have any money at all. Here's the weird bit that you need to get your head around. You could be an extraordinarily rich person in Jesus' day and have next to no money. Now, how could that be? How could you be extraordinarily rich and not have much money? It was a peasant society. And basically the idea was this, there were landowners. Landowners let people live on their land to grow food for them. You would get a percentage of their food. They got to stay on your land. They were allowed to grow enough food to live. So basically I'm an average poor person. I come along to a big rich person like the Wilsons. And I say, hey, I'm a poor wee veal. Can you give me somewhere to live? And they say, you can build a wee hut over there. You did not get in the building contractor. You went and built it yourself. I had to build my own house. Now, trust me, if I was building the house, my family would have been dead in a week. But it was a fairly moderate climate. It's not like building in Britain. You don't need to get the bricks or anything up. So I build my wee house. My family comes. Now, a wee house, maybe the size of your living room, something like that. I mean, it's not a big house. So I go out to build my house, my family moves in, And, you know, the Wilsons give me a wee patch of land and they say, right, you grow your stuff there. You grow enough food for you to eat. We'll take a wee percentage of what you grow and we might sell it. We might eat it ourselves. We don't know. And this is basically what the Wilsons would do. Now, if there was something that they needed, they wouldn't go down to the local market with money in their pocket. What would they go down to the local market with?
Food, trade
it. Food, yeah. You go down with food and you trade it. You barter. So you could be a reasonably rich person in Jesus' day and have very little money at all. Money tended to need money for taxation. And taxation was huge. I mean, people were basically taxed into starvation at times. There also was something happening in Jesus' time that landowners, you know, it used to be that the Wilsons would have been on their land forever. And I mean, it might have been a tenant. You know, my dad might have been a peasant on his land forever. And we'd have been there forever. But what was starting to happen is that, and because of wars, because the Romans had come in, the Wilsons might be kicked off their land. Or a guy might come along with a big parcel full of money and say, here, take these coins and you get off the land, I'm going to take it over. And then they would start to charge me, the poor wee peasant, lots and lots of rent. I couldn't afford it. I might have to up sticks and move. And when you're talking about a peasant house that was literally upping sticks and moving. So if even a fairly wealthy person didn't have money, a poor person quite often didn't have money. They also didn't have possessions that they could sell. They didn't have very much that was worth selling. So you get stories in the Bible like this. You heard the story about the widow with the two small coins. Jesus is watching all the rich men go up to the temple and they're putting coins into the temple. Every Jewish person had to put money into the temple. Every Jewish person. They put in much, much more than a tenth. Much, much more than a tenth. Because you had to sell quite a bit of food to get the money that was necessary. So an average Jewish person, all these rich guys are going along, they're putting in their money. Along comes a widow with two small coins. And Jesus said she gave more than everybody else because she gave everything, right? She gave everything she had. Now, if that woman was literally to give everything that she had, she'd probably have had to bring along the sticks of her house, her bed, and shove the whole lot in through the wee hole. But that's not how it worked. Those two small coins are probably things that she would have traded anything to get. Now, I mean, she would have had to give up blankets or clothing or things that were really, really important to her to get that, to get those two coins to give away. These were not her life savings. These are things that she would have really had to sacrifice for to be able to put into the temple. Where she may have got them from is actually referred to in another parable. Jesus talks about a woman who loses a coin in the house and she searches and searches everywhere for it, and it's meant to be a symbol of God's love. Now, some of you may have parents who, if they drop a fiver, really will turn the house upside down to five. And that fiver, I think it's got something to do with their Scottish blood. But most people, when you hear that story about a woman who turns a house upside down to find a coin, think, what's that about? You know, why would a woman turn a house upside down to find one coin? That's probably the only money this woman ever seen in her life. Seriously, I mean, she would have, you know, just had no need for money. Peasant, lives on the land, bit of grain, eats her food, never sees money. She would have got that money on her wedding day. Her family would have made a big sacrifice and would have gone down and sold something to get coins so that woman could wear it as a band on her head. So this was really precious to that woman. For a poor person to have a coin of any kind was a massive, massive sacrifice. So you've got to understand, when Jesus is talking about money at all in the Bible, you've got to understand most people never seen money. When Jesus says to somebody, go sell all your possessions, that's what was being said to a rich person. Because a poor person couldn't sell their house. If you wanted a house, what did you do? You built it yourself. You can't sell your house. If you want a bed, what do? You make it. You don't go down to, you know, MFI or whatever and go down to the store and fork out money. You make your own stuff. So people who are being told to sell their possessions and give to the poor are always rich people. They're always rich people. And part of the problem is, like I said, we get into these Marge Simpson moments. We don't think it through. We don't look at what world is like in Jesus' day. And so you don't think about what these verses mean. There were two types of people in Jesus' movement. There were people like Peter, Matthew, the sort of person this rich young fellow was meant to be. They were meant to go around with Jesus traveling. Could they collect a dole check when they were traveling? No, nobody's given them unemployment benefit. Where did they get their support from? Well, they got their support generally from either villages who give them hospitality. As a matter of fact, if you go into the Middle East today as a stranger, you quite often will be told, would you like to stay in my house, by a complete stranger? Middle Eastern hospitality is still a big, big thing. So hospitality was very important. But generally, you were relying on people. For example, have you heard of Mary and Martha in the Bible? Lazarus?
Yeah.
Lazarus, who was raised. They were stay-at-homes. And they supported the people who wandered about from village to village. So you got guys who followed Jesus, and they stayed at home and used their money to support Jesus. You also have people who give up everything to, follow, in the sense that they followed them around. But everybody was sacrificing everything, in the sense of, once you follow Jesus, you were saying, right, my life's goods, everything I own, everything I earn goes into helping you out now. If you want to get the Bible's attitude to wealth, if you want to get the Bible's attitude to money, it can be summed up in two statements from Paul. Paul, writing in 2 Corinthians, basically, he's writing in 2 Corinthians, and he's telling people that he wants to collect money for the church in Jerusalem because there's a famine. And here's his rule for the church. He says, I don't want anything left over to the one with the most, and nothing lacking to the one with the least. Nothing left over for the one with the most, nothing lacking to the one with the least. In other words, in the church, those who have money should give those to those who are poor. In Galatians, it's really interesting. There's a big argument between Paul and Peter over who was going to do what in the church. And there are all these arguments going on, and eventually they come to an agreement. But Peter says, right, Paul, you go ahead and do things your way, but one condition, I want you to remember the poor. Remembering the poor was really important for the church. The other side of that, in Timothy, Paul says this, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his family, he has denied the faith and he's worse than an unbeliever. So yeah, you have to take care of the poor, but that does not mean that people can sponge off people with money. You need people there to make money to help the poor. The job of the church is to help the poor. That's what being in the church is about. You help poor people. You got to get money from people who have a lot and get the money to the people who have a little. But the idea is to equal things out, to spread the money out so that nobody's starving. Ask you a question. When was the last time in your church somebody sold a car that it didn't need to help people who were starving, to help poor Christians in Romania? You ever heard of that? That was a basic rule in the early church. People sold what they didn't need to give people who didn't have anything. That was Paul's rule for the church. You got something you don't need, you sell it. You give it to people who need a lot more than you do. That was Paul's basic rule. And it meant that you did it for people who were hundreds of miles away. People in Greece were meant to give money for Christians who were starving to death in Jerusalem, and they would never see those Christians in their entire life. That was the basic rule of the church. And what it comes back to is this, is that the love of money is the root of all evil. Now, not money, but the love of money. The love of things. The love of saving things up. The love of acquiring things. Bling. You heard of bling? Please tell me I haven't just used the word bling for no reason whatsoever. It's a stupid word, but you know what I mean. The idea, you know, you got to have the, you guys, when you compare mobile phones, you compare shoes, you compare all sorts of things, because you've got this like wee unofficial league table that runs on in schools. Like my son came up the other day. My son, 10 years old, asks me for luminous yellow football boots. Why? Well, because Ronaldo wears them? No, Messi wears these boots. I said, look, Ben, just because you wear those boots doesn't mean you'll play like Messi. I know that, but I don't want my mates to laugh at me. They think my boots are useless. Well, what are they falling off you? No. What, you trip over them? No. Well, what's the problem? They're not luminous yellow. And the idea is that you spend money so that people don't laugh at you. And you have these little leagues at your age about what we're going to spend. And Paul was basically saying that's the root of all evil. You care more about how you look than what you give. You care more about what you own than who you help. And that's basically what goes on in church. Go into your church, take a look around and spot the fashion. Spot the fashion victims. You take a wee note of them. Try and work out how much was spent on haircuts alone. So I'd love to do that in a church, actually. I'd love to do a survey of church members and work out how much money went on haircuts. just on haircuts, I guarantee you, in a sizable church, 300-400 people, the money would maybe get up towards £10,000. I guarantee that. Haircuts. Something as simple as coats or shoes. The amount of money that we spend on shoes. It's insane. They go on your feet. Who's looking? But you can be guaranteed people spend huge amounts of money on them. You also get this idea. It's not just in terms of pure money as well. The other thing that you guys love to measure is success. So, for example, one thing that you guys will be told continually over and over and over for now till, well, not until you die, but certainly until you're 25. These are the most important exams you'll ever do your entire life. Now, look, they all can't be the most important exams you're ever going to do your entire life. No, they're not the most important exams you'll ever do in your entire life. I mean, I'm afraid they're not. You're going to be told that. I do not want that to be stand up to Mr. Turk and go, Mr. Field says you're a liar. But the bottom line is, the next time you're asked for your GCSE results is when you apply to tech or college. Then you'll be asked for your A-level results or your GMVQs. Then you'll be asked for whatever course you do next. And then they'll ask you about your first job reference, your second job reference. That's as good as you are, I'm afraid. So why do we get so worked up about these things? Because we like to stick our neighbours' noses, faces in it. I got 8 A's and you only got 6. Which some of you would be very happy to say. I managed to spell my name correctly in the start of the exam paper and you didn't. Might be more realistic. But we love to rub people's noses in it. To the extent now, if Paul was to write, in all honesty, if Paul was to have written his letter today and to say, the love of money is the root of all evil, it would make no sense. Because do people save money anymore? What do people do?
Spend.
How do you spend it? What do you use to spend money that you don't have? Credit card. Age of the credit card. Used to be that people would save money. As a matter of fact, I remember a sociologist speaking at Queen's on this, and he said his grandmother's generation, what he remembered his grandmother by was her savings book. She would go every week in the year, she would go down to the local shop and put in, she would have put in 10 pence or whatever it was, so that she could buy everybody Christmas gifts. So she saved for 52 weeks a year for Christmas. She thought ahead. That was the symbol of his grandparents' age, the savings book. Symbol of our age, the credit card. I am not kidding you. I phoned up the bank for a £200 overdraft. And while I was on the phone, they offered me a £20,000 loan. Now, that was a few years ago before the credit crunch. I didn't want a £20,000 loan. I got a credit card for the first time 2-3 years ago. When I looked at it, it was a £30,000 limit. I had to phone up and say, listen, I only want £200 in this. I only needed it to buy a vacuum cleaner on the internet. And they're offering me enough to buy, a sports car. The banks are throwing this money. You borrow money, and the idea is that they're going to get it back of you in interest. But we just borrow and spend what we don't have. Why? So we can rub our neighbours' faces in it. So you can be better than the person beside you. And to be honest, I don't think there's one person in this room who hasn't wanted to be a wee bit more fashionable so that they can make people beside them jealous. I do not believe that there's one person in the room who hasn't thought that way. Look at the state of me now. Do you believe I was ever fashionable? No, never. I never have been fashionable. And I thought that way. Right? Once upon a time, this idiot tried to be fashionable. I ended up buying a coat. I'll have to see if I can get a picture of it for you. I ended up trying to grow an afro. I don't know why, because they weren't fashionable. Right? I then attempted a goatee. Yeah, I looked like a ginger Jerry Adams. It did not work out. Yeah, and a coat that basically looked like a Red Indian blanket. It was terrible. I attempted fashion because that's what you do. You attempt to look fashionable. You attempt to get ahead. So this is what Paul is saying is the root of all evil. It's just basic covetousness. It's just basic wanting to be better than your neighbours. It's judging yourself not by who you help, not by who you care for, not by who owns you. Because you've got to remember, in Jesus' movement, Jesus said, store up for yourselves treasure in heaven. By that, he meant the kingdom of heaven. By that, he meant, when I bring the world to an end, and Jesus actually describes the end of the world, not as, if I say to you a picture of heaven, what do you imagine? Heaven, what do you imagine?
Big hole in the sky.
What's that? Clouds and people doing what? violins and harps and things like that. And that's our picture of heaven. That's not how Jesus described it. Jesus described heaven as a party, as a huge party, with everyone you love and admire at. That's how Jesus described it. Because Jesus said he'd make a new heavens and a new earth. And Jesus was saying, listen, you save up for that. You help people around you now so that you'll have possessions then. So Jesus was saying, listen, join my movement, there's the reward, and your value is you belong to me. We're not interested in who owns us, we're interested in what we own. So that's why Paul calls it the root of all evil. We're not interested in who owns us, we're interested in what we own. And if you go into a church, any church in Northern Ireland, any church, take a look at the car park, take a look at the haircuts. When I say take a look at the shoes, do not get thrown out for being creepy. But take a look. Do a wee head count and work out what's going on here. What is it that these people value? What is it that these people love? Because at the end of the day, they don't have any of these things without money. All right.